Whether you operate one forklift or thousands, one location or hundreds, the new My Toyota customer portal can help you optimize your operation and material handling equipment. This one-stop, free-to-use platform is designed to help you take control of your information and make smarter decisions, all at the touch of a button. Register and access your data today at my.toyotaforklift.com. That's my.toyotaforklift.com.
The New Warehouse Podcast, hosted by Kevin Lawton, is your source for insights and ideas from the distribution, transportation, and logistics industry. A new episode every Monday morning brings you the latest from industry experts and thought leaders. And now, here's Kevin.
Hey, it's Kevin Lawton with the New Warehouse Podcast, bringing you a new episode today. And on today's episode, I am going to be joined by Paul Jarrett. He is the owner and CEO at Bulu, and Bulu is a 3PL, and they're doing the tricky ship, as Paul likes to say. So we're going to learn all about that today. And I guess you guys are going to find out what happens when warehouses are sexy and tricky ship collide in one space here. So Paul, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, man. Thank you so much for having me on. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, definitely. I've been anticipating having you on and very excited to talk to you here and have this conversation today. So if people maybe are not familiar with Bulu, I know you mentioned that to me that you guys are kind of just coming out into the world in a sense a little bit, making a big push out there. So tell us a little bit about Bulu. What is Bulu and kind of your background too?
Yeah. So the interesting way that I kind of like to frame it, serve it up to people is what we do now is actually the very first problem that we encountered about 12 years ago. So we started off with our own subscription box and, you know, vitamin supplement, healthy snacks, built our own, you know, built the website, did everything, right? Raised some venture capital dollars. And it was off to the races. We grew to 60,000 subscribers pretty quick. Nice. And then, you know, we had a wild idea of, hey, let's make a retail buyer seller platform. So in our spare time, we built kind of LinkedIn.com for consumer packaged goods. It became the back end of RangeMe or part of RangeMe or whatever for anybody that knows that. And then we got approached by some big brands that said, you know, we're interested in buying you, or can you make one of those subscription boxes for us? And, you know, we full disclosure, like, we need the money, right? Yeah. I do say the things nobody ever says. So there you go. But we had two products that were growing quickly that were venture funded, and we just needed to put more gas on them. They're both working. And so we started building these subscription box programs out for brands, and that's what we became known for a long time. But fast forward to pandemic-ish time, and we knew there was so much more that we could offer because, you know, by then, for 8 years, 9 years, we had been trained by big brands to do like the hardest sort of logistics, right? Like they funded us to get a PhD in logistics, really, right? And so we went to our investors and we're able to negotiate a deal where now we own 100% of the company. We're just rolling out. That happened right at the end of 2023, right? Okay. So we just are letting the cat out of the bag. And now what we're focused on doing is we call it the tricky ship. Mostly because nobody really likes to talk logistics, fulfillment, you know, like people that aren't in the world, right? Yeah, yeah. And so we just thought like, well, what do our clients say? What do we say? And we call it the tricky ship. But what it really means is we have a 5PL hybrid hub and spoke model, right? Okay. So you can already see why we just call it the tricky ship. and what we say is what we see is probably about 80%, 90% of consumer packaged goods brands, right? Your makeup, vitamins, like anything that's easy to get on the shelf and sell quickly. They live in this linear 3PL world, right? Like, can I get it from point A to point B and manage my inventory? Like, that's really all they're, and not get screwed on shipping rates, right? Yeah. Like, that's kind of what everybody's looking for. And 3PLs aren't really great at it. We crushed the first two that we had. We had to acquire it. And, you know, we were kind of using fulfillment as the thing that we had to do to deliver for big brands. But as we really, as we acquired the company and started peeling back the layers, we're like, man, imagine if we worked with brands of any size. And we took this model and we could offer them unlimited sales channels. Like, it doesn't matter if it's physical or e-commerce or whatever. And they can pack it any way they want. And they can put it in any package that they want. Wouldn't that be like pretty awesome? Is there a market for that?
Yeah.
And so we went out and, you know, I think we've landed like 30 clients in the last 60 to 90 days.
Wow.
Because we're able to, you know, have these brands call independent retailers. You know, they're able to deliver to their store, like onesie, twosie fulfillment orders delivered to the client. They're able to sell on TikTok and they're kind of grabbing all of the green pastures that nobody else has grabbed and not get totally screwed on fulfillment, right? So we just say like 5PL services at a 3PL rate, and there's no big quarter of a million NetSuite Oracle integration, right? So that's what we're up to and it's working really well. And we're just getting the word out. And, but probably the thing I'm the most proud of is, you know, we're becoming a women-owned company, which is, you know, I'm not a good spokesperson for that. And we're getting a lot of cool certifications. I think B Corp's on the horizon. So yeah, it's a totally different world to be a VC company for a decade.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's all yours. And you know, like it's a lot of fun. We're having a lot of fun.
Yeah. I can definitely see you. You're enjoying it. And just talking about it there in itself. And you mentioned, you know, the women owned business. So we should definitely give a shout out to your wife. You guys are a husband and wife team, right? So tell us a little bit about that. I'm curious about kind of the dynamic there.
Yeah. Well, you know, the short version is never experienced any problems until the pandemic and then, you know, nuclear bombs go off. Right.
Yeah.
but, you know, we're both, you know, I'm from like a trailer park in Nebraska. She's from a little town, Wahoo, Nebraska. Right. We both went and worked in New York City and San Francisco. We've always generally worked together some form or fashion because we could kind of never find anybody to pull off advertising, marketing, product ideas. So we just always knew the other one would deliver, right? And so now we met in college and I don't think we've ever not worked together, whether it's a class project or whatever, since for, you know, almost 20 years. And anybody that gets to know Bulu, they know very quickly our clients do that, like, oh, Stephanie Jarrett runs the operation. And hats off to her. She closed our deal. Like, you know, she's like the rightful owner operator. Like, I'm cool with that, right? But I would say that, you know, not having external third parties kind of, you know, impacting decision making was the thing where after 10 years, we really saw a path to have a great long-term business that solves hard problems for people just like us, that we, the thing that we always wanted. And scaling is cool. We've done that before, like crazy growth software, like whatever, but there's just nothing better than like truly helping people with a good product compete in the market. And that's kind of where we always like meet and see eye to eye on. It's like, how do we level the playing field? How do we let small brand do the same things as Disney? Right. And so, I mean, neither one of us, especially me, like we wouldn't have it any other way. And I would just say that, you know, when it's challenging, but it's very rare. And when it works, it works. And I will say we run a system called EOS, Entrepreneurial Operating System.
Okay.
And that is a system that, you know, we go by the book by, right? Because it gives us the rules of engagement as coworkers, how to deal with each other, right? So she is the integrator. I am the visionary. The roles are crystal clear. And I think that is the thing that always, if we get a little off, having a third party by the book system that defines roles and responsibilities and agreeing to it, that's the difference, man. That is everything. So, yeah.
That's great. And I mean, that's pretty amazing that you've worked together for so long in multiple different capacities too. I think that's a great thing. And I met Stephanie, talked to her virtually previously too, and she's great as well. So, I mean, definitely really appreciate that kind of team dynamic there. So now talk to us a little bit about, I'm curious, the 5PL, right? Because you guys have your location there where you're at in Nebraska, right? But are you working with like other 3PLs to expand the network or how is that coming into play?
We'll be back after a quick break. You hear a lot about supply chains these days, because if the past couple years have taught us anything, it's that an efficient, well-managed supply chain is absolutely critical to keeping businesses successful and consumers happy. I'm Will Haywood, and I host a podcast called All Business, No Boundaries, where we talk about supply chains, how they work, what happens when they don't, and the innovations that are redefining what's possible in the world of logistics. Join me for insightful interviews with thought leaders and industry experts. We discuss how optimizing supply chains can break down the barriers that are holding businesses back. That's All Business, No Boundaries by DHL Supply Chain. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, so I always love, like, I do some logistics conferences and speaking and all of that stuff. And I invite, you know, anybody to kind of go like, what is that or whatever? Because like, the reality is like, we want to educate people that like logistics doesn't have to be that scary. And yeah. If you say what you do, I think a lot of the confusion in the 3PL world, if they just stuck to their guns and said what they do and that's it, and they don't do anything more or less, I think the separation would be good for the industry. But what we say is, you know, 3PL really is storing, packing, and shipping, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's kind of where the three comes from. And if you start to take anything before or after that and you get involved with it, then, you know, there's such thing as like an 8PL, right? Yeah. And so we will, in our system on the back end, we'll connect with manufacturers, with packaging, with all of those things. We'll pick up the phone. Being in Nebraska, there's a lot of manufacturing. So like next door to us, there's a flour-based consumer packaged goods co-packer. And we do almost like all their work coming out of there. You know, they can formula to finish, and then they're 50 feet away, right? Yeah. And they literally just drive it right bay to bay, right? And so we do get involved with the manufacturing element. So there you get your four. And then the five will come from like the ability to connect with potentially other 3PLs. We're very strict on it, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody knows the ship fill in the blank, you know, company, yeah. Right? Okay. And what I would say is like, that's great. There's a place for all those companies. I'm kind of tired of hearing people get screwed by them. Like, yeah. Let's just call a spade, right? But there's room in the ecosystem for them. And, you know, everybody should encourage that, right? Rising tide raises all ships. What I don't have patience for is, you know, if you're the Uber of shipping, sometimes you get a bad Uber driver.
Yeah.
And you just get out of the car and that's it.
Yeah.
What do you do if, you know, that happens to your product, right? That's problems.
Yeah, it's not
that easy. So we're very strict on who we work with, who we integrate with. Client has to be okay with it, et cetera. But I would say more so the five comes from the ability to integrate with 140 plus different channels. So, you know, you want to sell in that local independent retailer. You want to sell on TikTok. You want to do those things. The integrations are also already built in your dashboard with Bulu. So, you know, of course, we can't sell and get you into Walmart, but EDI compliance, bag and tag it, ship it the way that they want, online, offline, like that's what we do all day. So that's kind of where the two extra P's and the 3PL come from.
Gotcha. Okay. Very interesting. And you mentioned the kind of the Bulu dashboard there or platform. Do you guys have your own system that you developed, or are you leveraging another WMS or what's going on there?
I'm so glad you asked this question because like it's really important to me, but most people and podcasts and whatever don't care. Right. So
I care.
We built a WMS ourselves. Okay. We saw, you know, way before anybody else. I mean, we just had this coming to grips of saying like, hey, we built this custom solution works for big brands or whatever, but like, is it really possible to be amazing at software and logistics, right? Mm-hmm. And the same question we had when we were doing Bulu Box, is it possible to be amazing at the product and the logistics, right? Mm-hmm. And our attitude is, you know, for the way that we're built, for the owners or whatever, like, no, it's not really actually possible.
Yeah.
So we set out to find a WMS, and in the pandemic, we went through three, like fully loaded. And we rebuilt the entire warehouse, all 120,000 square feet, right? Mm-hmm. Which sounds like insanity, but if you're going to do what we do, you have to get it right.
Yeah.
And so we bumped it. We were using this thing called 3PL Central. Okay. And then we kind of saw some software being acquired and they became extensive.
Right.
now we have a great relationship with Extensive. I'm on the product development team. And, you know, they're just doing a lot of the things that, frankly, like if we didn't acquire Bulu and the fulfillment aspect, we were going to go build that thing. So, yeah, I hunted the CEO down. I hunted Andy down at a conference. And that was why I went to the conference. And he tried to walk by me and I stepped right in front of him. I was like, you're going to think I'm insane. I'm from Nebraska and I know what you're doing. I see what you're acquiring. And I have mapped this out on paper for almost 8 years. Can we please talk? And he did everything to get away from me, but like, I'll be, you know, I'll be damned. He emailed me that night. He did his homework and he was like, let's figure this out. And it's been off to the races since. So their software really allows us to do what we do. And for a brand, that's good because you have the keys to the software. I think that's important, right? Don't give anybody the keys of the software and the product, right? We have your product. That's enough.
Yeah.
The software, you should be flexible and fluid with that, right?
Very interesting. So you're involved in Extensive, I guess I take it?
Yeah. You know, I've done some presentations with the product development team. There's no exchange of money whatsoever. Right. There's nothing other than NDAs, but I would say that we're the place that they go, hey, we're thinking about doing this thing. How do the people on the floor? And I think that's the thing that I love about Extensive is nobody has ever really asked about like, how are things happening on the floor? I'm sure they're out there, but like they're really, really thinking about the user. And I think that a lot of the things that are out there, they were software people that never actually experienced a warehouse floor. And it just doesn't work the way, you know, it's not a, you can't just have a screen pop up and give somebody something complicated, right? Like it's got to be fast. It's got to be like, no, I always say no more complicated than whatever the most popular social media app is. If it's any more complicated than that, it's not going to work, right?
Yeah. It's so very true. And I think now, especially even more so as, you know, you try to get some younger potential employees in and, you know, like you said, like the most popular social media, I mean, that's what they're used to. Right. And utilizing apps that are super easy. So, you know, you bring them in and you show them, you know, a green black screen with green type emulator terminal, right. They're going to be like, what the hell is this? Right. Like I'm leaving. Right. So, you know, make it super easy, which I think is awesome. And I love the passion there that you have for that too. I think that's so important to having such a well-run operation and having a great employee experience as well. So we talked a little bit about kind of the brand side there too that you touched on and how you're trying to make that experience better. I'm curious, where do you think, as we look at, I guess, current state of industry, you know, on the 3PL side, on the e-commerce side, I mean, where do you think brands are kind of struggling the most with 3PLs right now? And how can they kind of navigate some of those challenges?
Yeah, I would say, I just want to say, like, it's one person's opinion, right? Like, I do really work hard to get out there, to get to conferences, to talk to people. Sometimes I feel like, you know, you would be in this group, but like nobody calls and talks to other 3PLs, which I think is crazy. Like we'll work with them, you know, and we teach even local 3PLs like how to do what we're doing. Like it's okay, right? Yeah. Like there's enough work for everybody, right?
Yeah.
What I would say is the number one thing that I see brands they struggle with is, and I don't have a better way of saying it, is like they're intimidated by logistics. Right. Like they don't understand the importance of negotiating, getting face to face with people. Right. I can relate because that's kind of how I was the first 2 years. Right. Okay. And we kind of had no choice. We had to get involved. So I think it's important for companies. Most CPG companies don't know that, like, if they're making a certain margin, they're actually probably a logistics company. And so maybe like that's the biggest problem. Right.
Yeah.
But I think that if you approach logistics like I'm just going to Google it and find it, that's like Googling and finding a lawyer and just picking the one that sounds the best. Right. Right? Now, if your ass is on the line, right, which it is with your product, are you actually going to just Google and find that lawyer? Probably not. You know, you're probably going to get a list of like 3 to 7 and find the best fit for multiple reasons, right? If you're just shopping for price, like good luck, you know, and that's okay. If you have your process down or whatever, that's a good fit for some people. If you need flexibility because you haven't quite hit the product market fit, like you need to find that in somebody, right? And that might be being able to send to a lot of different places because you're not quite sure is like churches buying these or is it a retail product, right? And then, you know, there's just the good ones all around that are, you know, probably way too expensive to use. And also, if you want to change anything, it's probably going to cause issues. So I think people right now, nowadays, need to really look for like tech-enabled 3PLs, right? And they need to get on the floor. They need to go. They need to see how it works. You know, if the 3PL won't produce like the software that they're running and they say Excel or like whatever, like you just have to get eyeballs on it, right? And I think if people do that or they find the right partners, then it tends to take care of themselves. I also, even when we had our own product, I do not believe that after a couple hundred or a couple thousand or whatever, I don't think people should be doing that themselves if they own the brand. They need to be out there selling. They need to be building relationships. They need to be working on all the other things. So I think that we're in a real turning point where there's this, you know, there's the old traditional 3PLs. They're still on paper. That would scare me, right? And then there's a new version that's like just software and like that's like their world. And, you know, come hell or high water, people better follow that system and they don't. And that's kind of scary, right? And then there's, you know, it's kind of like why we say hybrid, right? There's a new crop of people in the middle and they're able to leverage technology. And really, truly, I say like, what's logistics more than having a physical product and a digital version of that and ensuring that wherever that thing goes, the physical and digital ghost of it follow. Right. And these days of point A to point B, it's just over. So yeah, I would say that, you know, there's going to be a lot of CPG brands that go away because of some poor decisions. And they probably, you know, 3PLs and shipping and fulfillment should not be bottom of the totem pole in the minds of people. It's like an offensive line. It's the foundation, right? If you don't have a strong foundation and you don't understand the shipping rates or how your 3PL or internally, how much time you're spending packing, growth can be the biggest killer of all, right? Yeah. So yeah, it worries me, but also you got to remember, people that call us are usually in a really bad spot and they've tried everything and they're just, you know, in some absurd inventory issue that, you know, so we hear kind of like the most challenging cases because we like it and we like to fix it.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. And I think all really good points there. And I'm curious too, because, you know, you talked about the fact of, you know, just Googling and, you know, whoever comes up first and, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean they're the best option. Right. But I'm curious your thoughts too on, cause that's, you know, that's often a topic of discussion, I think, around the 3PLs themselves and just brands looking out there. And then I think one of the other kind of big topics is always around pricing too, as well. And you mentioned there that, you know, some like the top tier 3PLs, like maybe they might be too expensive, right? But I mean, what are your thoughts? Because you've been on both sides now, right? You've had the brand, you have the 3PL and all these things, right? So, I mean, how do you feel about pricing and how should a brand be thinking about pricing when they're talking to potentially negotiating with a 3PL?
Yep. So the number one thing I would say is if you're just searching, I would take those first, you know, like if you're just searching, like who can ship my product, right? Or how much do boxes cost? How much does shipping cost, right? If that's where you're at, which is most people, right? I would be really leery of anything that's showing up on the first page or two of Google, because the reality is in the pandemic, an absurd amount of investment, venture capital dollars, et cetera, went into the biggest opportunity, which was shipping and fulfilling, right? And man, I have some insights and some knowledge about what some companies are spending every month on marketing. And when there's a budget cut out to like make things quiet, right? Like make the bad reviews go away. Like it causes problems for all the traditional 3PLs that have been out there. So like there is right now we're in a phase where I think traditional 3PLs, I see it all the time. I get phone calls like they really have to rethink what they're doing because I never actually thought there would be a day where people just Google and go with whatever is out there for, you know, shipping their product. That blows my mind in general, right? I think when it comes to the actual cost, it right away, that opening bid is like, hey, send me your rate card. Because what that tells people is like, you know what you're doing, you want to see the rates or whatever. Now, here's the tricky thing about rate cards, right? You can maneuver that rate card as a 3PL any way that you want, right? Okay. And what we saw in the pandemic was pallet space is, you know, $8 a slot or whatever. And that's not real, right? That money is just getting pushed somewhere else, right? So we don't do that because it's like mentally exhausting to lie about those things, right?
Yeah.
Or to put your money somewhere else, right? So our rates, you know, we've lost tons of clients because our storage rate is what our storage rate is. It's based on rent and, you know, whatever space we're using, right? But what I would tell people is you're trying to get that rate card and you want to work with a company directly and have a conversation because, you know, what those things don't have in the softwares online is a conversation that goes like, hey, you know, if I was talking to, you know, Bobby, right? Hey, Bobby, those are metal water bottles. Can we stack those pallets on top of each other? Well, why do you ask that? Well, because then you're paying for one pallet space, not two. Actually, can we do that for all 1,500 pallets, right? Those are conversations that just only can happen when you're really getting a feel for the product.
Right.
And what I would do is take those things and really bucket it into like storing, packing, shipping. And what you'll see is you go a little crazy trying to figure out the shipping rates, right? And I would just ask for transparent pricing. I would tell those folks, I'm going to talk to 3 to 7 other places. I'm going to bucket you into store, pack, and ship. And I'm basically going to try to figure out, you know, what your margin is, or just tell me right now and show me. Because what you're actually looking for is not the cheapest, because there's probably a catch in there somewhere. Some 3PLs will lose money on you for a year or two. Because they're going to make so much on the, you know, rest of the contract, right?
Yeah.
Anybody that has a long contract, I would run the other way, right? We have 90 days. We would have shorter if we wanted to, but our lawyers won't let us. But our attitude is like, you should want to work with us, right? Yeah. And when you bucket those things down and you talk to 3 to 7 places, you start to learn what questions to ask, you know, whatever. But ultimately, you want to find a 3PL that's firm and fair and that is focused on a common goal, right? And what's the common goal? Let's get more shipping labels. That helps you 3PL and that helps us brand. Now, I do want to know if I'm the brand and I grow, what's your pricing at 500 a month versus 5,000 a month? Can you tell me that now? Can you get something down on paper that only stays the same or goes down or maybe up 10% with shipping or whatever? And so I think you can only get there by either working with somebody that you trust or doing the homework. And only through that process, you know, you're going to find the same way you find a good lawyer, good HR, good, like complicated things. That's how you should view the 3PL. It truly is a foundational partner. And I feel like I'm on a bit of a mission, like enlightening people to that, because our story would have been different if we had that $2 extra on Bulu Box. I mean, it would have been drastically different.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because you look at and you talk about this scenario. You go from, you know, 500 a month to 5,000 a month, something like that. And, you know, you look at just how quickly that volume can add up. And like you said, you know, $2 on one, like, you know, if you look at it just as singular, you're like, $2, you know, what's $2, right? But then you start to look at it over, you know, 500. 5,000, right? 10,000, right? I mean, that's a lot of money all of a sudden, right? So like you said, I mean, that even though it seems like, you know, maybe it's 50 cents here, 50 cents there, I mean, it adds up over time and it can definitely continue to snowball and grow, right? And eat into those margins. So I love the approach you take there. And I love that you guys are looking at it in that way.
There are a few key things that they're a little bit alike, you know, It's like I hear in my head, the 3PLs hate him for this. A couple of, here's two tricky tricks.
Yeah.
But number one is, like, you know, really press your 3PL and say, like, how do we get the rates down? Like, how do you get the rates down? Like, you know, like, specifically, how do you get the rates down? Right. If they're worth their salt, if they know what they're doing and they're upfront, in my opinion, and I would love to hear anybody else's thoughts on this, comment below. But I go to a lot of speaking events and talk about this. Yes, Bulu uses, you know, ShipStation, all those softwares, eHub, you name it. You know, we have access to stuff nobody else has, but we also bring in our reps every month and, you know, just have straight up real conversations with them, because how do you actually lower the rates? If you get down to the nitty gritty with these companies, it's your sales reps' commission. So you probably want to meet with them, develop a relationship, and get them to believe in you. And this is stuff you can take that, you know, if you want to do it yourself, right? The second thing is, you need to be able to either hear your 3PL or you predict the amount of trucks that you're going to need. I think that's a big difference that we have, right? If FedEx, we talk to them and they're like, hey, we got 9 trucks coming, yada, yada, yada. We're like, actually, you're going to need 8 because of this, and let's do this. So those are the two ways to actually get your shipping rates down, like predicting what you're going to need for trucks, and also that sales reps commission. And that takes a little bit of TLC. What was the other thing? I think those are pretty much the other thing is, I would say, if you're, I mean, this is going to be really general, but at least it's like something to work with for people. If your product expires, or you're a food, or it's complicated, you're probably looking at about 15 to 20% of whatever you sell that product is goes to, like, storing, packing, shipping, right? You know, the point of storing it to getting it to customers' hands, 15 to 20%, right? If it is something that's shelf stable, let's say like a toothbrush or whatever, you're probably looking more at that, like, 10 to 15%. So, you know, anytime you're paying over 20%, like, unless it's very specific, and we have a few clients that do, but, like, it's really difficult what they're doing or whatever. But that range, I think everybody should have in the back of their mind, and everybody should drill their 3PL and, like, no, like, what specifically are you going to do to get the rates down? Like, I need to hear you say it, and I need to know that I share in that. And then the last thing is, a lot of people that I work with or that I talk to, they always have this, like, someday, like, someday when we ship more, someday when, like, guess what? It's probably already here and you don't know it, because someday is, like, you're shipping, you're a business, you should get discounts. If you have any sort of growth, you should get discounts. If you're doing a subscription and you can project out the future, you should be getting the discounts a year or two from now, right? You get 10,000, you know, whatever it is, like, you should be constantly applying pressure. And that's a big mistake we made. We were shipping 60,000 a month, and we're like, man, like, we get to, like, 180,000. Like, I bet there's some big discounts. And the reality was, is we already had them. We just didn't know. Yeah.
Interesting stuff there, and very insightful on those kind of little tips there. I think not only from the brand perspective, but also from a 3PL perspective too, is, like, how do continue to be a partner in more ways than one, right? You know, it's one thing to be the partner and, you know, do the pick back and, you know, get it out the door, right? But how do you continue to help also your clients grow their business, increase their margins, and, you know, allow them to invest more in their business, which ultimately should help you out, like you said, get more of those labels and get more of those boxes out the door. So, really interesting stuff there. I'm curious, you know, before we kind of wrap up here, as we kind of talked a lot on the brand side a little bit there, I'm curious, where do you think the 3PL industry itself is kind of headed as we look into the future, like the next couple of years here?
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of conflict. I think there's going to be, you know, we've already, like, had robotic arms and stuff like that. And so, like, even on the floor level, like, the conflict, like, the bottom line is, like, as robots come in, like, it's scary and people are intimidated. And, you know, it doesn't take much for somebody to pour, like, a bottle of soda on a robot, you know? And so that's, you know, I think where we've positioned ourselves intentionally of, like, we're only going to bring in stuff that we can educate people on. You know, we call it elevate and delegate, right? So I think that's going to be happening. I hate to like sound cliche, but AI is like absurd, right? And I think that a lot of the traditional issues that have happened in logistics are going to be solved through AI, right? Because it can just calculate and kind of come out to like, oh, that product is 80% probably there, right? Like, don't even worry about bag and tagging it correctly because it's close enough or whatever. So I'm super excited. I'll tell you what, I would be terrified if I was like in the software industry right now, right? And you know, one of the reasons we are doing what we're doing is because we like the physical element. We love that the industry is so far behind in every manner. And I think we're going to see this like just absurd leap. And even for us, using AI within our CRM, using AI to produce lists and contracts and stuff like that. I mean, we're talking like, you know, we've probably avoided hiring about 5 or 6 positions, right? And so I think that if you make a super focused effort to dive into it, that's actually the wrong thing to do because you're going to be too far ahead of the industry. If you try to ignore it or fight it or talk smack about it, like it's going to come back and hit you twice as hard. What can you do? Put ChatGPT as an app on your phone, tinker with it, right? Put it on your desktop. Like just our industry is, it's going to be a big deal in the media, but I think in reality, it's like, are you teaching your people how to use AI? Are you teaching them how to charge the robot, right? Because all of those things still require management to it. And at the end of the day, somebody or something has to pick something up and get it to where it's got to go. And there's like a lot of different abilities to do that. And I will say like, I was around for the internet. I was around for like Google, you know, all these things. You know, I'm about a big tech geek, as you can imagine. I got my Cybertruck and my Apple Vision on the way, right? But I think what we're going to see is like some cool stuff where, you know, people walk into a warehouse, they put on glasses and they can just follow what the screen says. And that opens up opportunity for a lot of people. So I think it's going to be super fun. And I think you want a company that like is excited by those things, you know? And I think actually we're going to see it first and foremost on the manufacturing side. We already have a brand that we're bringing in machinery where people do like custom beauty products. And we're just like hitting buttons on this machine and it prints their name on the front. And I'm like, dude, that's so cool. You know, like, who would have thunk it? And so that it all excites me. I literally get goosebumps thinking about it because it's like, man, what a time, right? But if your company or whoever is like intimidated or they're, you know, negative towards it, like, oof, watch out because it's going to happen slow, but it will be big, massive leaps, I think, as far as cost and speed go.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's such a great way to look at it. And like you said, I mean, there's so much technology coming in and if you're not willing to embrace it, I think it is going to be a problem. Right. And at some point, right. I mean, I don't think we're quite at that point yet, but at some point you will get left behind in a sense, right? And you won't be able to keep up. So, and the expectations are just going to increase as other people are adapting this and bringing it into their operations and utilizing it with their clients. And then, you know, clients are going to expect it, right? I mean, just like we as consumers, you know, expect the 2-day delivery, right? Because of Amazon. So, I mean, it's the same thing, right? So being able to embrace that stuff, I think is a great takeaway there. So, so very interesting talking to you here, Paul, and great to connect with you and learn about the tricky ship that you guys are doing at Bulu over there. So really appreciate you coming on. If people are interested in learning more about Bulu or connecting with you, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah. So we got a bulugroup.com. This sounds like narcissistic, whatever, but we also have a pauljarrett.com. I'll tell people it's a marketing thing, right? It's almost like building a personality is weird, right? But those two are the websites. But I'll tell you, like, one, thank you for your time, man. Sure. Thank everybody for out there for listening. I know everybody's busy, but like, if you made it this far and you're interested in talking to me, it's just paul@bulugroup.com is my email. Get at me and I'll do my best to get back to it. But yeah, I feel like, you know, CPG and shipping and whatever, like we're actually all in it together. And it's fun to make good connections in this industry.
Absolutely. And I definitely appreciate that. And we will definitely put all that information at thenewwarehouse.com as well, so people can easily find it. So Paul, thank you once again for your time on the show today.
You've been listening to the New Warehouse Podcast with Kevin Lotte. Subscribe and check us out online at thenewwarehouse.com.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you want more content from the New Warehouse, check out our new video series called All Hands on LinkedIn. Just search for the New Warehouse on LinkedIn and follow along.